Hi, everybody. My name is Adam Brooks, and I am from Consulting for Strategic Growth. We are a global consulting and investor relations firm. We've been working with MWW in different capacities from the time it was taken public in 2006, and we are happy that today we can introduce MWW CEO Chuck Pinkerton and Rana Portner, responsible for global business development, investor relations, and investment banking relations to you. And again, just a quick organizational note. You've already heard the announcement on how to unmute your phone in order to ask questions. I kindly ask that everyone keeps their phone muted until we open for questions at the end. The call is also being recorded, and we will let everyone know how to make it available on either my website, which is www.cfsg1.com, or mwwautomotive.com. So check both websites after the call, and you will find links at some point to hear a replay. I'd like to open the call to Rana Portner now, and we will begin.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. As I'm Rana Portner, I'm responsible at the company at MWW for business development, investor relations, and investor banking relationships. I've been working with MWW actually from its first day of being a public company, and I have been consulting with all its management teams, beginning with its original founders up to the current team, and the company started in 2005 when we took it public. I have 20 years of experience in founding, managing, and securing expansion for public companies, and excluding founding and running two public companies of my own that I ran as a CEO. I've actually seen MWW develop from a small bootstrapped company working out of a garage somewhere in Michigan to a corporation that now can become a very significant player in a very profitable market segment of the automotive industry and now the industrial industries. Having worked with MWW for many years and in different configurations on the path of like finding our spot in these industries, I do believe that now with Chuck Pinkerton as our CEO at the helm of our ship, we have finally arrived at the beginning really of an exciting development for MWW. In the short time that Chuck has taken over the helm of our ship, I believe we've developed a very close relationship that enables us to assign responsibilities and really work this company hard to achieve the results that we want to achieve. And we're in excellent communication with each other on a daily basis. That's why I believe that MWW now has a management and production team that clearly has outstanding experience, longstanding relationships, and more importantly, the enthusiasm and devotion to secure MW's place in the industry and make it a promising venture for all of us, meaning all you shareholders and us as management teams and also as shareholders. I will introduce Chuck Pinkerton to you, who now has been our CEO since 2010. Beginning with the first day of his tenure, Chuck was guiding this small but innovative automotive company through the turmoil that suddenly had developed in the financial and subsequently in the automotive industry. I think you're all aware of what happened there, and I don't have to go into that detail. The automotive decline really hit home for us at MWW, especially with Toyota's decline. At that time, Toyota still being our major customer and generating most of our revenues. That's what we have been what we had been focusing on. Toyota was suddenly faced with major recalls, followed by the devastating tsunami, causing not only a temporary production shutdown in Japan and North America, but subsequently a tremendous loss of consumer confidence that still continues through today, which resulted, unfortunately, in a very dramatic decrease in MWW sales, since this was our major revenue generator. Chuck and I had talked before he joined the company. Him and I had talked and analyzed MWW's position for months before he decided actually to take on this job and bring his decades of experience in restructuring companies, which was something he was specialized on, and installing processes for manufacturing optimization, obviously very crucial for any company. He combined his long-standing experience and relationship with large domestic and foreign OEM manufacturers and brought this all to MWW. If you ask me, appointing Chuck as the new CEO has clearly established a very, very important turning point for MWW. I'm very happy that today we can report on what Chuck and his team have achieved over the last 12 months. I know many of you have waited for this for a long time, and provide you with an outlook over the next 12 months. This will give you an insight on how our entire extremely devoted management team and production team has taken us onto the next level of our growth for the company. We've carefully analyzed our strengths and weaknesses, our cost structure and vulnerability based on customer concentration, such as Toyota being our major revenue, or had been our major revenue generator. Instead of waiting to see how things develop, like many other smaller companies in the industry did, we've actually reacted quite proactively, as we believe, to the changing market conditions. We've strongly refocused on our core competencies and implemented strong cost reduction exercises, mainly driven by Chuck and since he came to join the company. And at the same time, we expanded production capacity and, most importantly, aggressively acquired new customers, not only in the automotive industry, but also in the industrial machinery industry segment. We've restructured not only our management group, but also our manufacturing team and production facilities. Chuck will go into more detail about this. These changes have actually enabled us to react quite dynamically to our customers' ever-changing production requirements, especially with our new customers that have different or have different requirements than our older customers. And our excellent track record of producing quality production allowed us really to secure new business very fast and with new OE customers. And like I said, Chuck will go into more detail with this in a minute when I'm finished. On the financial performance side, we clearly have not reached our goals yet. I think that's obvious to everybody. But while, as I mentioned before, we have reduced overhead drastically in all areas where it can be done without sacrificing production capacity or production quality, this is really important and is a very, very important mantra to us. This will allow us to improve future gross margins and net profits. We really consider ourselves right now only at the starting point of improving financial performance beginning in this second quarter and in this fiscal year. That's a very important statement. We consider ourselves really at the starting point of this. We will not provide detailed guidance for quarterly earnings going forward as the large companies do. We're simply too small to do that, and it's not wise to do that. But we'll always communicate our state of affairs to all of you shareholders as good as we can and as we are allowed to, subject to applicable rules and regulations, and partially I've reacted to that on some investor boards, what we can do and what we cannot do. Unfortunately, we're bound by certain rules and regulations. I hope you understand all this. Sometimes we certainly would like to pass on more details about certain new agreements or projects that we've just entered into or have been working on for quite some time already, but we're often prohibited from doing so based on restrictions put on us by our large OE partners or certain investment agreements that we have. Clearly, our first objective is always to keep our customers and investors happy. They provide the revenue and ultimately the share value for our small company. I would believe that this is not only in our, but also in every shareholder's interest. I truly believe that our interests there are clearly aligned. So I really beg for your understanding there. Oftentimes, not being able to pass on all the detail that we have available is as painful for us as it is for you out there. But it is in the interest of the company to do this in a really structured way. And I promise that we will improve our communication with you as good as we can. The last 12 months actually have been a very crucial year in MWW's business history. Like many other companies, we had to overcome the negative impact of a world in turmoil, caused by the meltdown of the financial markets and subsequently the really unprecedented turmoil in the automotive industry for all the reasons that we already talked about. While based on this impact, our revenues have decreased actually during 2011, this decrease is also a consequence of very focused and committed restructuring of our company from the bottom up and top down. This is something that Chuck Pinkerton has implemented very radically and very strictly right from his first day, and I'm very happy that he did so because it's showing the first results. You know, after addressing nearly all the issues that we needed to deal with over the last 12 months and reaction to the ever-changing markets, we're now really confident that we are on a solid path of recovery. We've quickly reacted to the market conditions as quickly as a small company can, and we have reorganized the company in a fashion that would not only make us survive difficult times, as many other companies have not, but also it had us refocus on the core strengths of MWW, developing a solid company that should be able to provide solid returns for our investors. Enough said for me right now. Let me pass this on to Chuck, who does the work in the trenches every day, day in and day out, and it's not easy. And he's supported by a small team of devoted team members. So, Chuck, why don't you give our shareholders some more insight?
Very good. Thank you very much for joining us on this call today. Good afternoon to all. Anytime it's 55 degrees in Michigan at the end of January, it makes for a very, very good afternoon. My name is Chuck Pinkerton, the CEO of MWW, and I'd like to take the few minutes here and just touch base on some questions that I know you've had over the time period, and also take a minute and just thank you very, very much for the opportunity to work with you and express our sincere appreciation for your continued support. I've been with MWW since 2010, and I can finally report to you that at long last, we are beginning to see the benefits of not only our company-wide restructuring efforts, but also the changes and adjustments made to our operational platform, along with the re-identification of our core business competencies. Before we get into the current business and talk about the future outlook, which I know is of interest to all of you, let's just touch base on last year for a fast second. Please keep in mind, this was a year of drastic rebuilding, restructuring, accelerated client and product diversification. The strong long-term positive effects of expanding our customer base, securing new business, to overcome the company's vulnerability of being tied so closely to Toyota. This has put a substantial burden on this company, complicated by the financial requirements of initial startup costs on several programs simultaneously, and that has been reflected in our numbers. Accordingly, we consider our numbers recovery mode numbers and not a true reflection of our performance. On the revenue side, as you can see from our annual 10K, revenues decreased compared with 2011. The main reason for this was our still existing dependency on one primary client, Toyota, and their troubles catching up with us a lot quicker than any of us had anticipated. This was driven by the tragedy in Japan, which, as Reiner mentioned, shut down the entire system pipeline and literally stopped MWW in our tracks for 6 months. We were getting no business from our largest customer. Also attributing to this decrease was the fact that we've been restructuring our entire organization. There's costs associated with it. Our operational expense side, in an effort to return this company to profitability, we've been able to reduce operating expenses considerably without sacrificing production capabilities or the quality of our goods and services that we provide to our customers on a daily basis. One of the primary savings has been the merging of our two production facilities. We have our main production facility in Baroda, Michigan, and we had a manufacturing and fulfillment operation here in Howell, Michigan. What we have done is we have moved all manufacturing operations from Howell to our ColorTech facility in Baroda. So now all painting, manufacturing, fulfillment, and logistics services are being done in one production facility, affording us the opportunity to keep a small corporate office in Howell, but removing a tremendous cost burden of a second production facility. This has been a significant cost savings to this company. From the beginning of my tenure here at MWW, I've been concentrating heavily on client and product diversification. Things that would guide us into new market areas, reducing our dependency on imported automobile industry, and the associated risk factors. We now have a widely diverse mixture of global and domestic clients and are entering into the agricultural, industrial, and green energy-efficient marketplaces, providing greater downside protection against the effects of change one primary client and one primary marketplace. The changes we have implemented to our business model have allowed this company to not only acquire new client base, but also dramatically increase our product offerings, thus becoming increasingly valuable to our clients, providing them with the one-stop shop, manufacturing, assembly, logistics, inventory, and many others. During the last 12 months, we have provided millions of dollars in RFQs to not only new clients in the automotive industry, but some of our largest moving forward opportunities are deriving from the agricultural equipment area. These are seven-year programs that will help our moving forward plan well into the future and secure predictable and stable revenue growth. We'll talk a little bit about that in a few minutes. New programs with Ford, Chevrolet, and Mazda have already been awarded. Production has started, and we'll be seeing the revenue impact of such in the second, third quarter of 2012. Over the next 3 years, we expect to turn up somewhere in the area of 12 to 15% of the RFQs we have submitted into revenue, while at the same time continuing to acquire new business. For those of you who have manufacturing backgrounds, we all understand that 5 to 10% are outstanding numbers on RFQs. Our market now is a little different from the way we've structured this, and we can certainly see a higher return coming from our value-added services to large clients. From the very first day I walked in this front door, we have been restructuring, diversifying, preparing for the expansion needs created by the demand generated by our entry into several new marketplaces. In order to meet this demand, we have secured in advance necessary resources such as equipment and skilled personnel far in advance. We are now in a position to launch new programs with no physical size limitation and without having to spend significant resources, as production requirements are now distributed and scheduled into three production lines of a three-shift operation. We have also implemented newly developed production schedules and heavily monitored output reports. We have been aggressively monitoring and improving all key performance indicators of this company on a daily basis. We have also been very fortunate and successful in developing new and strong, very substantial client relationships. We have quoted an enormous number of new opportunities over the past couple of years. and we have been awarded a reasonable amount of new business out of these, have begun production on many. Additional programs we have quoted will be awarded during the 2012 and 2013 years. Color Tech is an interesting story. Color Tech has been my primary focus in the diversification of this business, and long-term client relationships come hand-in-hand with that. The overall industry business model, especially in the automotive world, of large production runs, huge costs associated with inventory to support these runs has changed, and those days are gone. Our plan establishes us solidly in a niche marketplace, allowing us to satisfy the high-value mid-sized production run requirements of the global manufacturing in the automotive, agricultural, and industrial sector, which large automated facilities cannot provide. We have large, very large tier one finishing companies such as American Auto Coat, A&K Finishing, directing their clients to MWW Color Tech on a regular basis because of our ability to manage the smaller, mid-sized production runs that they cannot put through cost-effectively their very, very large manufacturing facilities. Our mid-volume capacity, in combination with our advanced logistics capabilities, satisfies our customers with their just-in-time inventory requirements, has enabled us to scale down and up as projects fit. With almost 50,000 square feet under roof and sitting on 20 acres of land, our Color Tech production facility is ready to accept any and all increases to volume, product offerings, and anything else. Anything else that comes our way. I'm picking up some reverberation. I apologize.
Yeah, we apologize for that.
We have expanded our production lines, added computerized mixing equipment, doubled the capacity in our fulfillment and inventory areas, improved our quality control team, and have an excellent team of production managers fully engaged on the floor on a daily basis. During the past 12 months, Color Tech has passed not only our ISO recertification, but has passed five major client audits: BSI International, Case New Holland, Polytech, Mazda USA, and Roush Performance Product have all audited and certified Color Tech. We have also added waterborne paint processing capabilities to our offerings. This new paint system will allow MWW to supply the rapidly growing quality client demands who are looking for environmentally friendly paint, which is really big in Europe right now, and it's just a matter of time before she comes over here to the United States and it becomes an absolute necessity. We've had startup delays, obviously, with these clients getting things going, which has certainly affected the numbers. You start launching major programs, such as the ones we're going to talk about here in a few minutes. And there's some, you know, we look for some to start in the middle of last year, and we talked about those in the press. They've been put back. Things are launching now. And we really, really believe that over the next, the second quarter and third quarter of this year, you will see the rewards of these efforts. I want to spend some time because I have looked at your blogs occasionally, and I've seen the emails coming through with questions. And you've been told so many times as our investors, you've heard a lot about RFQs, diversifications, new business opportunities, agricultural marketplaces, and I know you have questions related to those. I assume that you'd like a few specifics. You deserve those. So let's touch base on a few of those now, and maybe we can get some of your questions answered for you. As you're all aware, MWW's primary focus from the very beginning was a supply of automotive components to the Toyota vehicle processing centers. For a good number of years, this marketing approach worked. Toyota was riding the wave of being the number one automotive manufacturer. Accordingly, MWW's revenues reflected this, and there was little effort on MWW's part to secure additional customers outside of the world of Toyota. Well, as we all know, Toyota's marketplace position then began declining, driving us due to a series of major recalls, interruption of supply chain, and not to be understated, the complete resurgence of the domestic automobile companies, i.e. General Motors and Ford, have really impacted what's going on in the world of Toyota. Along with Toyota's problems came MWW's problems. 2007-2008, orders down 26%. 2008-2009, orders down 22%. 2010, orders down 38%. Long story short, we need customers fast. Beginning in 2010, when I arrived and got a lay of the land here, I implemented a program which I very simply call program sales, not project sales. In a nutshell, this approach trenches MWW acting as a tier two supplier servicing large clients with multiple opportunities rather than the time-consuming and revenue-draining one project at a time with individual clients. And while this leaves us somewhat dependent on our client securing the business, it also dramatically increases our success rate of programs awarded to us. If our tier ones are awarded the business, we get it. This also has our client acting not only as our business partner, but as our sales force. During the past 18 to 24 months, we have submitted in excess of $150 million in RFQs. That number has grown since the last time we released it. I believe we were talking somewhere in the area of $120 or $125 million. The breakdown on that, 56% of those are automotive exterior, 35% are agricultural and industrial, and 9% are automotive interior products. Keep in mind, these pricing submittals can be on programs that may not start for several years. The situation, though, is primarily within the automotive industry and really shouldn't affect us that deeply within the agricultural or industrial marketplaces. A few examples of the new programs coming from these RFQs that are currently running are the Ford Edge, Ford F-150 pickup truck, two versions of the Ford Mustang, the Chevy Malibu, Chevy Sonic, Mazda MX-5, and the Subaru Outback. These are very, very, very powerful names if you take a look at what we just talked about here. The F-150 pickup truck has been one of the largest selling vehicles in the United States for many, many years. The Sonic is the brand new Chevrolet. The Malibu is selling like wildfire right now, and the story goes on. Our primary client base has changed dramatically, keeping in mind with the issues we've had with Toyota. Our primary base right now is made up of our largest client, Polytech Fulha. Polytech Fulha is Austrian-based. They're one of the largest automotive supply companies in the world, and they're our largest client. MWW and Polytech have a North American painting relationship, exclusive. Current programs with Polytech Foha are the Malibu, the Edge, Forester, and also the Hyundai Genesis. We have submitted dozens of RFQs for future programs, and I personally talk to Polytech Foha every day. Another new customer for us, Mazda North America. Mazda North America is a very, very interesting opportunity for us. We've been awarded the MX-5 Mazda with full production starting the end of March 2012. Shipping not only in the United States, we are also supplying this car to Europe and Asia. The reason this program is so special, this is an original equipment sale. We will be selling directly into the plants. This is an OE. This is not an aftermarket program. The first true OE application that MWW has had. Another new name on the board is Roush Performance Products. Roush is one of the highest regarded names not only in the automotive industry, but in the green energy solutions, electric vehicle support systems, the aircraft industry, government programs. Roush has over 80 production facilities spread around the United States. MWW has been named exclusive painter to Roush Performance Products, currently awarded and in production on two versions of the Jack Roush Mustang. This is the first time Jack Roush has allowed his vehicle to be painted outside of his normal facility, which, again, he had to take a look at downsizing because of volume of sales. We are also working with Roush on electric charging stations for electric vehicles across North America. This particular client might be the single largest achievement in parallel with our industrial entry because the overwhelming opportunities at Roush are staggering. Roush is into so many things that it can't do anything other than help our shareholders dramatically as time moves on. Now the big secret that everybody read blogs on, who is this industrial company? Who is this industrial client? And we've had to hold these cards very close to our chest until we got some contracts going and some security signed on this. New client is called GSI International out of Italy. GSI International is one of the largest manufacturers of plastic, fiberglass, PPO, SMC components in the world. A few of their clients, they have an exclusive relationship with Fiat, Volvo, Audi, Volkswagen, Caterpillar, Ace New Holland, and the list goes on. To date, MWW has submitted over $50 million in RFQs to GSI, mostly involving the Case New Holland agricultural equipment products. As I mentioned earlier, these are not the normal three-year automotive runs. These are seven-year programs. Many are still in the developmental process, but some are getting very close. Our first program will be the K49 baler, which to many doesn't really mean anything, but it's a giant piece of farming equipment that costs $400,000, and it makes bales of hay, and they put big painted parts on there, and that's what we'll be supplying. There's been some slow startups here. We've had international engineering issues going back and forth that nobody really could have foreseen those. And basically what happened here is GSI's relationship with Fiat has guided them to the table as Fiat owns Case New Holland. We have completed our audits and sample submissions on all of these products. First startup and run slated for the end of April. Production right behind. Substantial revenues for MWW over the next 7 years. This is a painting, logistics, inventory, fulfillment, assembly operation all the way across the board. We at MWW are now beginning to see the impact of this aggressive restructuring, which, to be perfectly candid with you, has gone a lot more aggressively than my normal. We had no choice with the Toyota situation. We had to launch very quickly, and the times of phasing in change just weren't available to us. These have resulted in a drastic expansion of our client roster. A couple years ago, we had Toyota. Now you've just heard my basically my resume of clients. Over the past 5 months, MWW has also attracted interest from additional new major automotive and industrial clients in addition to servicing our ongoing customers. The bulk of this production on the CASE program, which is by far our largest opportunity, will take place in the second half of this calendar year. Roush is up and starting now. I have meetings at Roush as early as tomorrow on another program. These are immediate business. There's not a lot of testing and not a lot of startup involved with those. Those are just launches. But, again, we've worked very hard for you. I know that our results haven't always been what you were hoping for when you got involved with our company. But I can assure you that every day we're out there doing the best we possibly can for our shareholders. And I don't know what else I can say other than thank you for your patience, thank you for your consideration, and rest assured that I will continue to do my best as long as I possibly can. Back to Reiner.
Thanks very much, Chuck. Very intimate information here, and I'm glad everyone on the call had the opportunity to hear this from you directly. Very much appreciated. I hope that has already answered many of the questions that you actually have in mind, because I'm certainly familiar with what's going around on the blocks, and I communicate this with Chuck on a daily basis. So we're pretty much aware of what your concerns are, and we appreciate them. I appreciate the positive tenor of everything out there. And I appreciate that you all believe in our company as a small company that is solid, you know. And now that you've heard everything about our past restructuring and then our new product opportunities, which are really plenty, and it maybe gives you an oversight or a picture or an insight into like how tough it is for us as a small company to manage all of it. You know, so obviously we're limited in putting on big campaigns or anything. We're really focused on a daily basis to make this company work, to start new projects, and at the same time keep our communication with you up. And then when we're there, attend to the stock. I've always said to everybody, and I've said this many times before, we're not your typical penny stock company. You will not see us. As much as some people maybe would like to see that, you will not see us to do any pump and dump campaigns. Neither will you see frequent press releases that with unsubstantiated facts. You know, we're not that kind of company. We work to produce value. I truly believe, or Chuck and I truly believe, that this, the value of the company, the projects that we execute, the revenues that we will produce moving forward, these will be the convincing factors will convince shareholders out there on a wide basis, institutional, retail, individuals, to enter into our stock. And what better to enter into the stock at the levels we're at right now, you know? I mean, there are no guarantees in life, and especially not on Wall Street. We all know that. You all experienced investors. So we're not sitting here saying we guarantee, we guarantee, we guarantee. The one thing that we guarantee, so, is that MWW management is very experienced, and it's a devoted team of individuals led by Chuck, who is in this every day, basically 24/7, with long-standing relationships in the automotive and industrial industry. And our sole goal is really to succeed as a company and to produce the return on investment for our shareholders that you can expect from a solid small company like ours, and probably even better. Yeah. The one thing we can promise you, hard work, and we will always be honest with our shareholders, good or bad. We will talk to you. We will let you know. I understand that not every decision we make, especially in the area of funding of new projects, I've heard a lot about this on the boards, and the expansion of the company is always easy to understand or very transparent to shareholders, you know. Let me assure you, we always have the best interest of our shareholders in mind, and that also includes ourselves as shareholders. Many people in this company, including Chuck and myself, we've made substantial financial sacrifices and additional investments into the company, and this time where we have very tight cash flow because we believe in MWW and we believe in the future of this company. The cash flow will continue to be tight for some time for us and will most likely or potentially require additional investments to finance new productions and the expansion of the company. But, you know, it's a very simple choice. We do not have access to traditional financing at this point in time. As you all know, credit with traditional lending methods, banks, has dried up for many companies, not only for us. It's a simple choice then. No new financing equals no or drastically delayed growth. Additional financing, even if it creates some additional dilution, will generate growing revenues and will eventually increase the share price. So we handle this very, very, very carefully, and we only finance with the available instruments what we absolutely need to do to generate the fastest possible return on investment that we can produce, you know. And in the midterm and in the long run, all of this will be to the benefit of the company. We'll produce increasing revenues and profits, and the share price will follow. I am absolutely convinced of this. This is not my first rodeo, you know. Let me explain some other issues which I understand are possibly on your mind. The shares currently undervalued? It's a very simple answer. Yes. Based on our current financial performance, maybe not. But based on the secured potential business, on our projected revenues, on the outline of projects that you just heard from Chuck, and everything we've been able to secure over the last 12 months, and the profits and the revenues that we'll generate with this, and the subsequent improvement logically in share value, absolutely yes. So the risk of investing into marketing worldwide at this point in time or become a long-term shareholder is relatively low. Considerably easier than expecting to make a large profit in a reasonable amount of time with a share price of a large blue chip company of $175, you know. So we are at the bottom, I believe, with our share price right now, but what is better than getting in at a very promising company with enormous potential at the bottom, you know? Obviously, we're not here to give individual investment advice. You have to do your own research, as you know you do. But I would really consider MWW an exceptional opportunity to get in at the bottom. Another question I hear floating out there quite often is, what is the number of outstanding shares right now? And we still are at a very reasonable 156 million right now. That includes a lot of conversion that already has come through the market. So this is a pretty solid number still, even after all the financing that we have done to accelerate the generation of revenue, getting back on our feet, being able to execute all these new projects and manufacture quickly with high quality and satisfy our customers. In order to do that, we need the money to get this done. And this is what we're doing, and we still only have 156 million outstanding shares. Solid little company. $125 or now $150 million in RFQ. What happened to those? Chuck already addressed that, and we've already secured a reasonable portion of that, and Chuck already mentioned what we expect to secure in addition to that. Going forward, we'll probably, over a period of time, get more of a grip on what we actually also select. You have to understand, we probably cannot execute $150 million of RFQs all at the same time. the company is simply too small for that. So at a certain point in time, Chuck and myself, we also have to sit together, our management team, and we have to make certain selections, what we execute, what's most profitable for us, where are the highest profit margins, and we will be very happy to be in the position where we can actually choose and pick. I believe that we will there pretty soon with all the RFQs that Chuck has been able to submit and with all the potential business that is out there for us. You know, we expect our revenues to increase considerably in 2012, even more so in 2013, and the real effect, I think, in 2014 will be basically no limits, depending on, like, how we expand our production facilities, how we expand our company entirely, and how many projects we take on, you know. So there is a real huge growth potential ahead of us. We are, as Chuck said before, as I said before, we are at the starting point. We are at the starting point of everything here. The convertible debt, plus or minuses, I oftentimes hear the word convertible debt is toxic. Well, it depends what kind of convertible debt. The proof is really in the pudding here, so to speak. Convertible debt can be an investment of X amount of dollars that's convertible into shares at a fixed price. It can be at a discount to market with a floor in it, and it can be at a discount to market simply with no floor. The two first versions are a lot less toxic than the third version. The third version you can only enter into if you got a long-standing relationship with an investment bank or investment fund that is on the same wavelength that we are. You know, not all the funds that provide you with convertible debt are into throwing these shares right back into the market. We've entered into instruments that have 6 to 12 months restrictions on them before they come into the market. So these companies are also interested that we actually develop our revenues and profit margins, and that our share price increases, because it's also to their benefit if we have a higher share price. They simply make more money, as do we. The best interest for everybody involved is always to make money. If funds can make money, if it's advantageous to us, if it's advantageous to shareholder, it's a good instrument. I've been doing this for 20 years. I've raised a lot of money for my own public companies before. I've raised significant amounts for marketing worldwide. And I do believe that we have relationships where these kind of convertible debts are not toxic for us, but certainly manageable. And we always make sure that when we enter into new instruments, if we have to, that we make the most advantageous deals for us that will allow us to produce the ROI for our investors that we need, you know. We're currently working our way through these outstanding instruments, and we have already processed the majority of the notes through the market. So for your information, the majority of what we have released in our financial statements has already been processed through the market. So pretty soon we'll see less pressure on the stock, and there's a good chance that with a little bit of buying support, we will see the spread close down, we will see the ask going up. And we even closed on the ask today at a considerable volume. So we're continuing to work naturally, and we will provide that information. We have provided most of that information in our 10-K filing, as we are allowed to, and we'll continue to provide that detailed information in our next 10-Q filing, which is due actually very soon. So unfortunately, we can't do this outside these filings, but you will always be up to date through our filings. And again, the majority of these notes has already been processed through the market. If we enter into new notes, they're not going to be due until 6 months from now. You know, we're continuing naturally to work on traditional methods of financing. And actually, Chuck and I have just put our heads together last week, and we may have certain avenues where we can achieve that, so we can avoid some of the other financing methods, and we'll work on that harder, and hopefully that will allow us to do less and less of the conversion financing, which obviously then would be advantageous for us. That's what we're aiming for. Investor relations, I hear so often, well, big campaigns and, like, get out there with a big blast. I've been founding and running my own public companies, as I said before, 20 years. And before I began consulting for MWW several years ago, I've probably been through most imaginable scenarios that you could think of, good and bad, up and down, from share prices to 10 cents to $38 was the best result I achieved. I'm pretty familiar with every most possible scenario, but we do not believe in pump-and-dump campaigns or fly-by-night IR companies. I have always found that these are a disadvantage for you in the long time, in the long run. We believe that all share or most of the shareholders that we have right now are actually believe in the company, believe in the substance of the company, and are willing to hold their shares with us for a little while until they see our performance improving. These are the shareholders we're looking for. We're not going to execute expensive short-term campaigns that will only spike the share price short-term for a day or two so somebody can get out of a larger position, and it's not going to do anything for the company or the rest of the shareholders. We want substantial growth over a period of time, and we will communicate this appropriately and more aggressively going forward. Now, since we have a lot to talk about, we'll communicate this to the investor communities out there, and we will see the results. I'm absolutely convinced of that. You know, we're just not the typical penny stock that lends itself to the kind of speculation. We'd like to attract long-term holders who believe in the substance of the company's business and its management team. We do believe that we will really be able to provide long-term gains for such investors. I was going to talk a little bit about the general market developments, but I think I can skip that because most of you are actually familiar with the general market conditions, especially in the automotive industry. 2011 clearly showed a return to profitability and increased sales. Market light vehicle sales increased by 10% to 12.8 million in 2011. That's a good return already. Toyota Motor sales were down actually 1 million units, as Chuck went into the details of why that is the case and why that caused considerable problems for us, which we now have overcome. And Hyundai, Kia, Automotive, these are really the outliers, and they have made it through the crisis in a superb fashion. And we're very happy, I'm very happy, that Chuck has been able to secure business, especially with Hyundai for us, which is going to be a large, large customers for us. Ford Motor Company, obviously, is like a burgeoning business, and again, Chuck has secured business with them. So the sales basically have become more widely dispersed among the car makers and smaller players. So outside the top seven have now increased their slice in U.S. sales, and smaller production runs as required by those customers who are now at the top of the field. This is our specialty, and it falls squarely within our core competency. You know, the most executives and analysts out there understand that the old normal is like 9 straight years with sales over 16 million is over. And nobody is really sure what the new normal is be, but the average of the old analysts out there is maybe that 14.5 million is a realistic average market size in the new area. And for us, this is perfect because this new normal produces a smaller production runs. It's the perfect scenario for MWW and will allow us, as opposed to the large OE manufacturers, manufacture economically and profitably. Our own projections for 2012 and 2013 are totally in sync with those generally market projections. And like Chuck already explained in detail, we've spent the last 16 months to really react very dynamically to the changing market conditions, and we feel that we're now in a strong position to take advantage of those changes. So in my mind, or in our mind, MWW is very well positioned to benefit from this general recovery of the automotive market, and in addition, now the benefits we will reap from the entry into the industrial markets, which will nicely supplement our automotive industry. We're in the right place at the right time. We now have expanded our customer base to most big players in the automotive industry and have also entered into the industrial area now with one of the biggest players out there. And it's taken Chuck a long, long time to get through all the certifications, the production certifications, the manufacturing certifications. We had teams from Europe, from America, like, checking us out left and right, top to bottom, and we've passed these all with flying colors thanks to the changes that Chuck has made in this company and in our manufacturing facility. So we should, based on this, see a significant increase on revenues and bottom line over the next few years. You know, we really have an experienced and hardworking management and production team that, with Chuck's leadership, is working hard to achieve all these goals we've set for the company. And we've made considerable progress in the turnaround of the company, and with the appropriate financing at the right time, always selected to be advantageous for us, we really believe that we'll generate a significant value for all our shareholders in the mid and long term. Let me say at the end of our presentation here is that you, as our shareholders, you're most likely the best PR and support group that we could ask for. With your help and your understanding and support, we can actually make MWW succeed fast, and meet and exceed everybody's, and maybe most expectations. I promise you, we're working very hard on this every day, and we will communicate all our progress to you more frequently than we have in the past, and I hope that gave you a good insight into the company, and maybe we have answered already most of your questions. If there are any questions, please *6, and we'll try and address them as good as possible. Let's try and be organized about this so it doesn't end into quite chaos. But maybe we have answered all your questions. Thank you for everybody participating. Okay. Adam, are you still there?
I am. I'm here.
Okay, perfect. So it seems, Chuck, it seems that we may have answered most of the questions already. Since we're not getting any questions, that would be excellent. That was our intention. So again, thank you, everybody. And,
Randall, let me just remind everyone that there is an option to hit *6 to
yes.
unmute yourself if anybody is trying to ask a question. They need to hit *6 to unmute.
Okay, we'll give you another 5 seconds.
Go ahead.
Sorry?
Yes, I have a question.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes, my name is Brian Dugan, and I really do appreciate this opportunity to listen to what you have to say, and I really am impressed with your presentation and the outlook that you presented for shareholders. One question that I would like answered, if possible, is some outlook information on projected revenues for the upcoming year the fiscal year ending September the 30th?
Yeah, sure. We could do that. Chuck, do you want to take this? Do you want me to take it?
Well, I could take it. Our first quarter, which we'll be putting the results together here very soon, was fairly status quo with what we saw at the end of last year. We're projecting internally right now. I would be very satisfied looking at the amount of potential coming out of some of these new accounts. We're somewhere in the area. My thought process would be somewhere in the area of $4 million.
That's for 2012, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we both agree, Chuck, that for 2013 we can easily double that. And correct me if I'm wrong. And 2014, we actually, that's the year where we expect some accelerated growth, because this is when many of our RFQs that are late starters could potentially kick in and add to the existing business that we have. Would you agree with that, Chuck?
Absolutely. If we take a $4 million demarcation line for 12 and just take 5, 7, 8% on the RFQs that we already have out there, not even looking at new opportunities that will come above and beyond that. The numbers you were talking about are very realistic.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for participating in the call. Anybody else?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
This is Walter Scott, and you have addressed the matter that an awful lot of the conversions have already taken place.
Yes.
At this time, I've heard a rumor that the February conversions had been converted prior to the conference call. Do we have any conversions between now and the warrants due in June?
I'm not quite sure what the list there is. I know there is one additional conversion that will come in the period up until June, but I believe that's all we have coming at this point in time. You know, I mean, naturally, that doesn't mean it's going to be the only investment opportunity. And you also have to understand, not every investment opportunity moving forward will be a convertible debenture. Naturally, I'm also aiming for straightforward equity investments, which are always much, much healthier for a company and have also several follow-up aspects. If you get investors into the company with a pure equity investment at a reasonable price, those investors always have an interest in the midterm and long-term success of the company, so they will help the company in continuing to funding exciting business opportunities to get large production runs off the ground, which then will produce the revenue and the profit that increase our share price. You know, also, what we need to do is we need to get the share price up to a certain point so we can attract institutional investors. Right now, as you may know or suspect, we can't get any interest from institutional investors because our share price is too low. Our volume, and I'm being very realistic about this. We don't want to BS anybody about this. So I am working really, really hard to get this all to a level so we get institutional interest, because institutional interest is finally the next jump that will allow us to really create a solid company and a solidly growing share price. That's what's always needed to help out the retail investors or the individual investors like you. So again, there might be another conversion, convertible debt, but the attempt is to secure traditional financing or equity investment or institutional investment that will be not as advantageous on the share price and would help us to get the share price up, obviously in your interest and in our interest.
Oh, that sounds very good. And I was very impressed with the Form 4 that you filed, where you personally bought the 3 million shares. That certainly helped my confidence.
Thank you. I was trying to make a point with this. I was trying to make to really make a statement with this and say, hey, look, I believe in this company. I put my money where my mouth is, and that's what I'm doing.
Yep, that was excellent. Is there any hope that so we might get any stimulus money from the Obama administration in the form of a loan?
Yeah, we're trying all kinds of avenues right now. And I think Chuck and I will have a little more time now to focus more on these issues as well. We had our hands full over the last 12 months. That's why we keep reiterating the fact that we feel we're at a starting point now. So I think Chuck and myself, we can become more strategic now and look for more avenues. And Chuck, already, I think you've already approached a few different possibilities, and we're working on that. Yeah.
That was actually a very good question. It falls back into one of my previous assignments, if you will. I am a IRS-certified individual for energy conservation on buildings, And we are looking every day at what can we do with the lighting, what can we do with the HVAC factors, what can we do with the roofing, what can we do any way, shape, or form to get at that stimulus money. It's very difficult to do, but we are examining it every day. We are working with our banks and anyone else we can, and our large customers, of course, are trying to help us too. But it's a very, very slippery slope, and at our size, it becomes a little difficult. I mean, giant Sony plants have no problem getting millions and millions of dollars in stimulus money at the blink of an eye. A small firm like ours trying to take care of its shareholders, just not quite so easy.
Yeah. But we're trying every day.
Every day.
It's very much appreciated. I'm here for the long haul. And thank you.
Thank you very much.
Reiner?
Yep.
My name is Hertz. I appreciate the forum that you put on today, Mr. Pinkerton. I have a couple questions for Mr. Pinkerton. May I proceed?
Please go ahead. Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yes.
Been a long-time shareholder, calling you from Texas. Here's the situation. In the pinky world, which we are still in at this time, we're trading on the OTC. You know that. Communication is very, very important with your shareholders. The last press release that you folks have disseminated was back in November of 2011. Other than the press release notifying us of this conference call, can the shareholders look forward to, with all due respect, sir, a little more communication on any type of contracts or events that are occurring with your company?
Well, I'd be happy to answer that question because that bothers me too. Our releasing information, we usually release when we have the bird in hand, if you will, once the contract is signed. And it's very difficult for our clients and our prospective clients to allow us to release information until things are done. That's one of the main reasons I was looking forward to today's forum, because I know people like yourselves and many, many of the other investors are wondering what's really going on. And it was much easier for me, obviously, to touch on some things during a conference call today to publish them in the national press. We will certainly be able to release more information. We are going to be seeing more and more activity coming into the building, and I assure you that the minute we see something that we can publish, we will publish. We really do want to keep you as our shareholder informed as much as we can, and I know it had been a while before. I believe you're talking about the Mazda release was the last one, but it had been a while prior to that, and we will do a better job of that. We've released what we were comfortable releasing without causing a problem for our clients, and that will continue to be the case. But as these clients have grown with us over the past 2 years, and we've become very, very entrenched with each other as business partners, they're giving us a little more latitude in what we can and cannot do. Those things that we couldn't do a year ago, we will be able to do now, such as discussing these things in an open forum like this conference call.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. My second question would be this. I know that you put out a great, great press release, a shareholder update. I believe Reiner wrote it. It was great. It gave us a nice sort of a calendar on where we're going and what we're doing. My question, and I know that a lot of shareholders support me in asking this question, Mr. Pinkerton, you seem to have touched on the tip of the iceberg today on a major industrial client. I think maybe in Europe, maybe in the United States. Regardless, when can we expect that industrial client is going to be privy to us, the shareholder? When can we learn a little bit more about this person, this client of yours, this company that you've been in discussions with?
I would right now do for you.
You'd make my day, Mr. Pinkerton. Mr. Pinkerton, if you're married, I'll send your wife a dozen roses today. Yellow. Friendship. You got it.
Don't do that. You'll spoil her.
Let me interview
you. No, the reality of it is
this. Reiner, let him speak. Let him speak. Go ahead, Mr. Pinkerton.
Let me into a little secret here. Jim Beam is good.
Hey. I'll send both. I'll send the yellow rose and the gym.
No. Here, let's do this. The fact of the matter is, as we spoke a little bit during my conversation, and you're right, I touched on the tip of the iceberg with the GSI International. I have right now a multitude, and I address $50 million was my number, multitude of programs quoted through GSI International as the managing wing for Case New Holland. So there's your customer. And
okay,
we are seeing
I'm clapping. I'm just doing it very silently so I don't interrupt the other listeners. That's all.
Okay.
All right. And the issue with that is, as I addressed earlier, we have gone through our international testing. We had an authorization audit team come in from Italy and take a look at our facility in Baroda, Michigan. That was an interesting day. And the fact of the matter is that we are starting to ramp up, and we are looking at April, somewhere at the end of April or so, to get our prototype. We've actually run sample stations, and we've passed everything. Looking to get started somewhere end of April, somewhere in that area, close to the end of April.
Okay. And Mr. Pinkerton, I have one more question, not directed to you, but I would like to introduce him because he has done so well. I know he's been conducting this forum here, but you have hired one heck of an IR leader in Reiner. He returns every one of my phone calls. In fact, he answers every one of my phone calls. He returns emails. The man is so diligent, and I just want to tell you, whatever you're paying them, you need to be paying them more because we're very, very fortunate.
Oh, you're killing me. You're killing me.
Well, he's good. He's good, Chuck. Chuck, he's good, and you know it. He's darn good. But
let me share something with you, my friend, very quickly.
Yes, sir.
I didn't hire Reiner. I was actually contacted by Reiner come in and do a quick study of this company. I've done several turnarounds to do a quick study of this company. And to be honest with you, 100% honest with you, there was something about this company and Reiner and his enthusiasm that he brought to the table. And my plan was to be in and out of here in 90 days, and 2 years later, here we sit. So, I mean, we're all in this together, but you're absolutely correct. I mean, he's one hell of a guy, and I assure you, he has his shareholders at heart.
I want to add one thing. Without a doubt, he's the Tom Brady of MWWC. He is our most valuable player in terms of keeping confidence with your shareholders. Reiner, just one last question that I want to direct to you.
Sure.
And you and I have spoken about this before. I want to compliment you, Mr. Pinkerton, and everyone else. The way that you folks have done the financing so that the share price has not crashed is very, very commendable. It was very intelligent and very, very well thought out. I know that you have stated here today that the OS is now $156 million. Where do you think we go from here, gentlemen, in terms of, you know, obviously, if you need money, I mean, what should the average investor, potential investor, and current investor think of? 156, hey, that's awesome. I love it. I mean, that I couldn't ask for anything else. That is a great, great, outstanding share count. But should we be looking to further maybe 200 million? I mean, where are we on that, if you could address that as close as you can.
And I'll be very honest with you, as I always have been. First of all, thanks for your compliment. I really appreciate that. It's like I've got the, the biggest interest for this company at heart. Actually, I was the one who took this company public in 2006 as a favor to the CEO at that point in time, who's our chairman today. And so this company is what I'm focused on, and I want to make this company work. And I think the best way to do that is to be always straightforward with your shareholders, talk to them, pick up the phone. There's no reason ever to hide from your shareholders, like I said earlier on, good or bad. We're all in the same boat. We all want the same thing. So that's what I'm trying to do. In regards to the outstanding shares, you're right. We might get to 200 million at some point in time. Hopefully not much further than that. It really very much depends on how quickly we can develop our revenues. If we don't have any further delays, Chuck already explained that some of our first quarter results are based on the fact that some of our large customers, especially Case New Holland, which is the big industrial client, they had so many organizational issues, and it's taken them so much longer than originally was anticipated, even to get us certified and everything. So we always had to stand by and kind of say, oh, my God, how long is this going to take? You know. So depending, sure, depending on these issues, it's a mixture of how quickly you develop our revenues, what kind of interest I can get on the in the investment opportunity out there, what kind of interest we can get from traditional sources of funding. We would try and not cause any more dilution if we can. But the one thing that we will do if we need to, we'll keep it as low as possible. So we're not of the mindset that we're throwing out 500 million shares here for whatever. Shares, a share price is as important to us as anything else, and our intention is really to kind of increase it drastically from here on out, so as little dilution as we can.
Well, Ryan, I just want to say this. Even at 200 million, many of my colleagues that are sharing in this forum today will tell you that is a steal. That is a great deal in OTC land, because we see all these corporations diluting, you know, into the billions every day, and 200
yeah.
million is
yeah.
is still that's a picnic, that's a walk in the park. Let me just leave it at this. You got the Jim Beam coming, Mr. Pinkerton. thank you. You guys put on a very professional production today, and I just want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart, and I will be long with you all. I'm staying on board. You guys, if you ever get a chance, stop by Investor Hub and visit us, say hello.
Sure.
And other than that, Mr. Pinkerton, Rainer, hey, you guys have a great evening.
Thank you so
much. I'm going
to
sign off.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Anybody else?
Yes, I have a question.
Sure.
My name is Charles Anders. I was interested in finding out what the potential production capacity is at the Barada plant.
Yeah, Chuck can answer that very nicely. He's the expert there.
That's a great question. We have, under roof, as I mentioned earlier, we have 50,000 square feet. We have three paint lines running right now on 2.5 shifts. We have capacity that we can expand at a moment's notice. We have a fully outfitted finesse line for the fine-tuning required on the automotive products. Our staffing, we have managers on the floor who've been with the company for many, many years. We have a fully certified quality control group. We have departmental heads and assistants in each area throughout the facility on both shifts, and we have a relationship with a employment company over there in St. Joseph, Michigan, which is right near Baroda, and they take care of our staffing needs on a daily basis in and out, so we can adjust our schedules accordingly. We have a core group in there of about 45 people on right now in that plant, and we bring in as needed, could be 20, could be 30, could be 10, whatever, from the staffing service to supplement, but always with scrutinized and tight supervision involved. We have no capacity issues in the plant. We have divided it out where we do certain projects on a day shift operation, for example. And then when you start doing things like the automotive work, for the most part, would be done on a day shift. We start looking into the afternoon shift as we do some automotive and more of the industrial type work. These are large products, the side of a tractor. These panels are 8 to 10 feet long, and they take up a lot of oven space. So we tend to segregate those off onto a shift by themselves. And in and out on a moment's notice, but it's all about the scheduling and how we effectively do that. And right now we don't have capacity issues. We were running, I can tell you that just a year and a half ago, we were running a few days a week on very limited production. So to have two shifts running wide open is quite rewarding for us. But we also have the ability, and there's been some conversation, certainly it's going to be a down-the-road thing. We all know what the financial situation is right now. But, sitting on that property over there in a very rural area with a good core of employment, it would be very, very easy to blow out the front of that plant and push forward and actually double the size of it if we had to.
Yeah, we own an enormous amount of land around it, and so we own the building and a large amount of land around it.
20 acres.
Yeah, I've been by the plant there in the last month or so. Okay. I guess I was looking for a dollar figure as to, we're up and running and we get every contract that you want for us to have. I mean, could we do $10 million a year out of that plant?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
We can actually do a lot more out of that plant than that.
Okay, that's the kind of figure I'm looking at. That's what I want to know. I want to know a dollar value on what we could actually produce out of there.
Oh, understood. It's a lot more than $10 million we can produce out of there, Chuck.
Question about that. I mean, but actually, right now, could we run $10 million through there effectively if we had the contracts in hand? Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Hi, I have a question. This is Ron Kletter. How are you guys?
Hi, Ron. Nice,
hello, Ron.
Nice to see you on the call.
Good. It was a great call. You guys did an awesome job. I just had a thought and a question I've been going over. Is there any sort of merger or acquisition talk or thoughts with this company at all?
We're always looking into that. As you may know, we've done some acquisitions before in Europe that haven't really worked out. We always look for acquisitions because there's a surplus of companies out there that would be a good target in certain industry segments. Small companies having problems in this environment right now is not necessarily a sign that they're bad companies. So we're always on the lookout. We're always looking and of increasing our critical mass with an acquisition faster than we can do our own through our own organic growth. I've always been a big fan of this kind of expansion, especially for a public company. One reason why we actually took the company public in 2006 was the fact that being a public company not only gives you a share price value, but it also, with the stock you have as a public company, gives you a currency to make those acquisitions and then double or triple your revenue and your profit relatively quickly or faster than you could do it with organic growth. The result of that then naturally would be that you immediately appeal to a larger investment community, institutional investors, and all the consequences that a critical mass has in this market. So to answer your questions, it's always on our radar. We have nothing specific right now. Like I said earlier, we had our hands full to really get through this period. And I'll repeat it, we feel we're at a starting point now, Ron, and when Chuck and I can clear our heads a little bit better and we have these productions all up and running, It's always a big effort to get these new productions up and running. Once that is the case, I think we'll pay more attention to that as well. And if a good opportunity comes along, that's to our advantage. Yes, definitely.
Great job, and thank you all so much. It was a great call.
Thanks, Ron, for being a good
Thanks,
chairman.
Ron.
All righty.
Okay, anybody else, or did we hopefully answer all questions to everybody's satisfaction?
That's it, Reiner.
Okay.
I think we closed with Ron.
Thank you very much, everybody. It was a pleasure to have you on this call, and I hope we gave you the information that you were looking for, and we're looking forward to communicating with you more intensely going forward, and thank you for supporting us and being our shareholder. Chuck?
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Greatly
appreciate it. Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.